Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. It was a very Nick Caserio heavy day yesterday. He spoke to the media, so we'll get to some stuff there. You know, we gave you that somewhat breaking news, and we commemorated it by playing the breaking news sounder a little lower than normal, because on the scale of breaking news, Nick Caserio telling us that either they get a deal done for CJ before week one, or they won't do it until the offseason. He's just telling us what we all thought was going to happen anyway. But he did answer us, or at least answer the media directly. He also talked about a lot of other things, a lot of offensive line play questions because of the attention that was placed on it in the offseason and the final results. So we'll hear from the Texans general manager, who gave us some direct answers. I don't know what got into him. I'm sure there's a lot of meandering and not saying things on other subjects, but we're getting close to the football season. The Nick is a changed man, it looks like. He's willing to answer some questions in a direct way. We'll see how long that lasts. But we'll hear from him in a little bit. And Dana Brown as well, because as I wanted him to do, he is out there answering questions about the Astros and his tenure. It didn't help his potential to be on a broadcast set that the Astros lost last night and the Rangers won. The hope for me is, if they're not going to be a team that finishes below 500 and wins the division, which I expressed when we were at the Golden Nugget, give me Dana Brown as the Astros correspondent, however long their playoff run goes. Put him on. I'm sure NBC might have a playoff game or two, if that's what they negotiated now that they have a stake in Sunday Night Baseball. Whether it be Fox, whatever it is, TBS, get me Dana Brown. I've suffered through enough Jim Bowden talking about baseball and the Astros. Give me some Dana Brown. Give us some insight into the team he put together, particularly if they actually make the playoffs. That's in a bit of danger, not because of Ronel Blanco. We did not mention yesterday when we were discussing his return to the rotation that his previous outing, it was a minor league outing, he gave up 10 runs. We did not actually get to that yesterday.
We were not positive.
No, but we did not throw in that nugget.
We kept that to ourselves.
Yeah, we were talking about the unlikelihood of him coming back to this rotation and talking about all the variables that caused it. None of them really speaking to the strength of an Astros pitching staff. It was, well, he's pretty much the only one left, so he's got to go out there. We did not throw in the fact that they had a prime example of him being awful against minor leaguers and still made him a starter. And you know what? They were proven right. He didn't go deep into the game, but he was just fine. He left, and the Astros had a chance to win. It's unfortunate that the rest of the bullpen did not do him or the team any favors. And neither did the bats, by the way. I mean, Paredes hits a home run in the eighth, but other than that, the bats didn't do anything. So it didn't matter how many runs the Astros staff gave up. If it was more than one, they're going to lose. And that was a case where they dropped the second game of that series to the White Sox. Imai, who we also discuss, not pitching very much, got out there.
Hey.
Look at that. They went to him. It's about time. It's been, what, over a week since the last time he pitched?
All he needs long relievers.
Well, there is a clip in there. We were talking about Imai because he's been a topic conversation. It was pulled for a promo where you were suggesting, considering how many times he's had an awful outing and then he goes out there and pitches pretty well. This was back when he was a more prominent member of the staff, that he should throw simulated games to take the place of one of the potential blowups.
Yeah.
And then
just get rocked.
Get rocked in a simulated game and come out there and pitch well. I don't know if they took that to heart.
I don't think they did. It doesn't sound like they did.
I don't think the Astros listened to us on anything, which is unfortunate. I would like some control. Me and Jeff Bagwell going back and forth on ideas about how the Astros should be run.
Just brainstorm.
I'm sure he would appreciate that very much. Would he like to talk to nerds in analytics or a guy who talks about his team in the way I talk about the team and see which one he would enjoy more? But they did bring a couple guys they brought in this offseason, Tang and Imai. Neither one of them pitched very well. They were the cause of the 5 runs that the Astros gave up, and they dropped that one 5-1 as they got shut down by Sean Burke. Big dude. 6'6", 240, shut down the Astros last night, along with the rest of that of the White Sox staff, as he went 5 2/3 of one hit baseball, and then the rest of the White Sox put the Astros away. So that wasn't a great night. It's a tough night when we had a text I mentioned in yesterday's show where KJ was frustrated by all the walks. Pretty frustrating to watch your team put up 3 hits, and one of them comes in the 8th inning, courtesy of the Paredes home run. That was a tough watch baseball wise for the Astros. You were, I won't say excited by Ronel Blanco, but at least you were happy that, considering what he had been, what you thought could have occurred, he pitched certainly well enough for you to take the second game of the series, and your bats decided not today. They weren't having it today. And you drop it, and now your game up because the Rangers got a win, and Seattle got a win too. So, you know, only a game up, only a game above 500, and you've got the White Sox again tonight. And it'll be Hayden Wesneski, who's pitched pretty well overall against Davis Martin, as you try to take third game and continue what has been, at least the last week and a half or so, of playing good baseball. You want to win another series. Winning tonight is certainly important, as it'll just be this thing over and over again. As far as how close this race will be, I don't know that any team, no matter who wins it by more than a game. I feel like this is a final day of the regular season type deal. Hopefully the Astros are in a position where they control their destiny. But I think for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be doing this thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they do control their own destiny. It's unfortunately their destiny is in the hands of themselves, which is not a trustworthy.
No, it's shaky hands.
No. Yeah, it is just going to be, I feel like, hoping you take 2 out of 3 and that the Rangers or Mariners don't take 2 out of 3 in their series. Like, I agree that it is just, I don't know. The Mariners have an easy schedule. In theory, they should be able to rip off some wins.
Sure.
But also, they are the worst team of this division race. Of this crappy division race, they are the worst team in it still. So, I don't know. It really is just going to come down to, like, do you get a random Ronel Blanco good 4 innings, and can you score runs next time to take advantage of it?
So, pulling up the Astros schedule, they have 2 more against the White Sox. So, and it's Hunter Brown, it's Wesneski and Hunter Brown. They got a afternoon start because well, the White Sox got to get out of town. So, and then they host the Arizona Diamondbacks. So, Chicago, Arizona, and then you get Philly and Tampa. So that is a tough stretch.
It's but a lot of playoff time.
The Astros have shown on occasion that they can play better against the better teams. I am really not looking forward to Saturday, September 26th, and you got to go to Sacramento and worrying about what the A's are going to do to ruin your season. Because I can already see it. As I said, I really don't believe when we come down to it, anyone's going to gain any real ground in this division where it turns out the last weekend doesn't really matter. I think it's just going to come down to last weekend. And the thought of having to put the A's away in that ballpark, I'm not comforted by it if I just go by recent history when it comes to the Astros and the A's. And that is preceded by a two-game set with the Mariners. So you got the two-game set with the Mariners and then four in Sacramento. Just get ready, everybody. You might feel pretty good after the Arizona, Philly, Tampa Bay stretch because the Astros are confounding. Then you got KC and Atlanta for a total of six at home. And then you head out to the West Coast for a lot of late-night baseball. 8:40, 9:10, 8:40, 8:40, 8:40. And then you're blessed with a 2-5 start on the last game for the last game of the regular season. Imagine thinking about how late do I got to stay up to watch this average baseball team play a bunch of crap teams in hopes that they win the division and just win these games. That's on the table for everyone. We can only hope that either they don't matter because the lead's big enough, or if it does matter, that the team takes care of business. But that's late September. We got plenty of games to go before then, and you got Wesneski on the mound tonight. All right, the number is 713-780-3776 if you want to join us. As I mentioned, to start, we've got plenty of sound from either former decision makers in this town with Dana Brown or the current leader as far as personnel moves for the Texans. So we'll get to that. We'll hear from Dabo, the next coach, to talk about the state of college football. So we'll hear from him. You can guess how he feels, right? If I gave you one guess about how Dabo feels about college football right now, you think you could nail it?
I love it. Well, I was built for this era, obviously.
Yeah, clearly Dabo, adaptable in all ways. So we'll hear from him as his Clemson Tigers have the LSU Tigers on the week one schedule. They got to go to Baton Rouge for that one. We got a top 10 team on Friday night. It's sneaking up on us, at least on me. Stanford hosts Miami. I'm not buzzed. I don't know why. Maybe when Friday hits, maybe because it's Stanford, maybe because I know it's going to be a sleepy time in Palo Alto. Yeah, I don't know. Because Miami put out a hype video. It's like, you know what? There's a lot of expectations, a lot of hype for this team, and I'm not there yet. I'm like, it's a 3-touchdown-plus line. The only way this gets exciting is if Miami plays poorly, which is not a comforting thought. I was actually looking at Stanford's injury report, and because they got to play in week one-ish, whatever you want to call it, they've got a starting center who might now play. Maybe they rested a couple guys, and they'll be back. So I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to. Maybe the first Malachi Toney touchdown gets me there. I don't know.
Yeah, watch some Malachi Toney highlights.
Trust me, it was the only way I got through the Indiana game.
Hey, that guy plays on Friday.
He's good. I remember him. So maybe I'll get there. But right now, the TCU North Carolina didn't get me there. Stanford Hawaii didn't get me there. But we're getting there as far as the big timers going at it. And maybe as we get ever closer, my excitement will build. But we'll hear from Dabo in one of the more intriguing matchups for week one as we get going on the show. That segment went out of the way. We will be back.
Hey, this is Rich Eisen. Coming up on Wednesday's show, Baker Mayfield of the Bucks. Dana White joins us in studio, and multiple-time Grammy Award winner Michael Bublé will join us.
The Rich Eisen Show, noon to 3 on ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
Thank you.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So we'll get to Nick Caserio here, but I was going through some notes put together for the upcoming college football season. And I knew this because we have talked about it, but we won't hear Gary Danielson this year. He has been the analyst for that 2:30 slot on CBS for years now, whether it be when the SEC was there and the last couple of years of the Big Ten. Charles Davis is taking that job, so no Gary Danielson this year. So if you're going to miss the former quarterback from Purdue, maybe go listen to some old highlights with him and Vern calling the SEC, because he won't be around to do those games anywhere this year.
So it's going to be Brad Nessler still?
I believe Brad Nessler and Charles Davis will be doing those games as Brad Nessler continues to go.
Yeah.
He's been around, well, at least 20-plus years now, because he was calling games back when the BCS was a thing and doing it, but early, back when back on ABC, when ABC had their best theme song ever. Now, we may be hearing Pat McAfee as one of his songs as the opener for game day. So times have changed in that regard.
Nessler started with ESPN in 1992.
Yeah, he's been around a while now. He's out and is the – now, look.
Voice of the old video game?
Yeah. Ooh. CBS doesn't have the SEC anymore, and they don't have first pick of the Big Ten game. So they have fallen by – they've fallen down the tiers of places you go for your big games. Now, they will get games from, as was pointed out in this article, like when Oregon is playing at home, they will get that game because it's not a Pac-12 game, but a Pacific Coast game. So they would maybe get Oregon against Indiana like they got last year. But the best Big Ten games, the ones that are featured on Big Noon Kickoff with the traditional Big Ten teams, for the most part, like Michigan, Ohio State, they don't get. So they didn't pay up for what the SEC wanted. And they have fallen down a couple spots when it comes to where you go to if you're looking for a big game on a Saturday. But they'll have their games, and I'm sure with Oregon being pretty good, they'll at least get some Oregon games this year. All right, let's get to what Nick Caserio said yesterday. It was his first time, at least I'm sure he's done 6-10 stuff or whatever they're called now, but the first time the media as a whole got to talk to him since the trade and since certainly that the 53-man had been finalized. He talked about a couple things, but let's hear from him on who he thinks the best O-lineman for the Texans is. And this may comfort you or upset you considering what they did in this offseason to strengthen the O-line. Here's Nick Caserio on his best O-lineman.
But in the end, we feel like Keelan's right now, you know, the best left guard. I mean, honestly, he's probably one of our best. He's probably the best offensive lineman that we have. So glad he's here. So if he has to go play center at some point, I'm sure he could do it. But we feel like right now the best spot for him is a left guard, you know, with Evan at center, and then with that at right guard. Just changed probably since he's been playing football. So it was definitely something that we liked about him. I think from a football standpoint, majority of his snaps were at right guard, so that's kind of had to evaluate. Now we've moved him over to left guard, and he's kind of assimilated without issue there. I think there's some things pass protection-wise that, quite frankly, showed up negatively, like when you could look at some of the one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl and some of his tape, and some of it was a little bit more technique-related, but he's very coachable. He wants to do it the right way. He can absorb a lot of information, and he shows up on a tape. I mean, D'Amico shows highlights and, you know, we'll practice every day, and he shows up on the tape finishing plays clean, not being dirty, but going right to the line, which is what you want to see. Like him and Crosby kind of, you know, got into it a little bit, and then they cut it off, all right? I mean, he wasn't backing down from Max, and Max is one of the best players in the league, and, you know, Max is a badass, I would say. So, I mean, Keelan's not afraid. So, like, he's got bite, he's got physicality, he's got toughness, you know, which is why we drafted him, and you saw that on his tape, and, you know, hopefully we can carry that, you know, through to the season, which, you know, I think everybody's pretty confident that he will.
So if we go by the D'Amico showing video of Rutledge and his practice reps. He is now the standard bearer in that room, the best O lineman in the room, according to Nick Caserio. So this is a real test of, are you a glass half empty person or a glass half full person? I've had the conversation already, so I'll ask you, Sean. Does it make you feel good that your first round pick, who you were going to play at center, but decided let's stick him at guard where, you know, the position he knows best, is your best O-lineman as a rookie? Or does it make you feel worse because you have invested in that O-line over the last couple seasons? In fact, you paid money to a couple guys to help this O-line, and still Rutledge is the guy the GM thinks is the best.
I think it's definitely good for Nick Caserio. It's definitely good for Nick Caserio. He needed a win. He needed a clear win. I think it's a good thing that, because if he wasn't, then it's like, so Evan Ingram's better than him?
Like
Ed Ingram's better? And the Browns? Trent and Evan? Well. Like it gets, you know, it gets pretty scary pretty fast. So it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the bar is low.
Yeah,
it's to like, clear.
Okay. Yeah.
And the hope is...
Makes me think he's going to be a good NFL player.
We've had a similar discussion earlier. Is he a Quentin Nelson type at guard, and that's why he's the best O-lineman on the team, or he's the tallest little person with some potential?
Yeah.
I think it's probably in the middle, really. I don't think he's Quentin Nelson as a rookie. You can only hope, right? But I am, as people might have guessed, generally a half-empty person. I'm a pessimist, and I like to look at things and go, what's the worst possible scenario? And then I work my way from there to try to think of the positive way. I didn't have much faith in this Texas offensive line to begin with, despite some people's excitement over the additions, and the additions have proven to be guys who aren't even going to start for you for a couple of reasons, whether it be injury with Brayden Smith, although he was being beat up by Trent Brown and Wyatt Teller, despite his words about, yeah, I wasn't really motivated my last couple of years in Cleveland, and that is the reason for my drop-off in play. He gets here where you would think he's supremely motivated on a good team with a chance to do something big, and he still can't win a job after being benched in Cleveland. So I wasn't overwhelmed by the talent they added, but I am happy that the first-round pick seems to be like a hit, and that was something people eyed from the jump when they got to see Rutledge play as a Texan, that there's something there. So the GM is telling you that feels like a hit. Now we got to go see him play against real bodies in real games, but all positives from him. So we'll take that. It also means that this offensive line, despite what they did this offseason, they're going to be changes next offseason. You don't really have anybody besides Ursary and you throw it at Ed Ingram out there. They gave him money. Ursary, Rutledge, and Ed Ingram that you can see here pass this year. So you still need to fix two spots. And center, whether you do it through free agency or you draft another early pick, make another early pick, needs to be fixed. And Trent Brown's on a year-to-year basis. Now, you paid Brayden Smith for 2 years, but if you can't beat out Trent Brown, and he's already injured and is going to be on IR, I believe, for the first four games, then you have to think about go getting yourself a right tackle somewhere, somehow. So we thought we might have had answers this year. Maybe all five spots would have been at least fixed for a couple years, considering the length of the deals for Teller and Brayden Smith. That feels like something that will be addressed one more time in the 2026 offseason or 2027 offseason.
Let's run it back.
Hey, it's the never-ending cycle of trying to find guys to put five offensive linemen on the field that you feel good about.
Sign two more vet free agents, draft one more guy in the first two rounds. Let's
do it all again.
Nick Caserio's hot. He's hit. I mean, in theory. Kieran Rutledge still has not actually played a game.
Yeah.
But he's hit his last two. First two rounds.
Ursary was good enough. We'll see if he's...
I'm counting.
I get you. I understand.
He was the start of the entire
I understand. And hopefully he makes another or makes an, a, makes a jump, and then you can go, maybe we have a good left tackle.
Yeah, that left side.
Yeah, you certainly hope so. You certainly hope you got that.
Don't let Casero get hot drafting off.
Well, I was listening to a podcast.
He was in trouble.
They were breaking down the Texans' run game history. It was pretty much since Nick Casario's been here. The Texans have been atrocious running the ball on a down and down basis for almost the entirety of Nick Casario's tenure. We had the bright spot of Joe Mixon because he was just a hard runner and he got things done sometimes. He got yards when things weren't blocked up. But for almost his entire tenure, this Texans offensive line could not block up anyone when it came to running football. The passing game in the last year, Bobby Slowick had his issues because the O-line got fooled by simple stunts and twists. That seems to be out of the way now that Cole Popovich is here. But
I completely forgot about that.
But they still got to find a way to run the ball, and they have not been able to do that consistently for the better part of five seasons now. So hopefully, despite using a journeyman at center on a 17, Lance, he didn't reveal it because it's just a stat you can look up, but I didn't take a look at Evan Brown's tenure in the NFL. 17 now.
Yeah.
And he's your starting center.
Lucky number 7.
It's a hodgepodge. Sure. Half glass, half full guy. Clearly. It is a hodgepodge of guys you hope comes together to give you a run game that's sufficient enough to support C.J. Stroud, who, according to that podcast I was listening to, like on dropbacks when he was out there, the Texans were the 12th best team of football on his dropbacks. It's an analytics stat where it's about success rate on dropbacks, and the Texans were 12th. So that's much better than you would think. But the run game was in the dirt.
That also is what I would think.
Yeah.
That is more what I would think than the dropbacks. But I guess it does kind of have to even out a little bit. The fact that they did score points.
Yes.
Like,
the run game was bad, and we know it, so somehow they were scoring points.
They moved the ball. They did score touchdowns.
Yeah, so
later in the season, they did.
There was a lot of field goals throughout, but they did score touchdowns, and that was because the passing game, at least when C.J. Stroud was out there, was top half of the league. It just so happens that it was balanced out with the bottom third of the league-type running game. David and LaRosa, you want to join us? We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to join us? It's 713-780-3776. But first, Sean's going to tell you about Prize Picks.
Yes, Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app. And it is September football, like we said earlier, just about getting started. Maybe you're believing in Kelen Rutledge and this revamped Texans offensive line featuring Evan Brown, Trent Brown, and then, yes, Ed Ingram, Kelen Rutledge. And you think that David Montgomery, now the maybe not starting running back, but the 1A, after being in the shadow of Jahmyr Gibbs for so long, he's now going to run for more than 7.5 rushing touchdowns. Well, if you think that, you can go to Prize Picks and put in a season-long projection pick. You can build your lineup full of season projections. Kyme Fairbairn, do you think he's going to make more than 33.5 field goals? He went way over. He was in the 40s last year. Also, like Josh Allen, scoring more than 34.5 passing and rushing touchdowns combined. He's another guy who's been in the 40s with that the last couple years. I think 39 the year before, or last year, the year before, the 2 years before, over 40. And also, as always, for the rest of the month of September, they have a guaranteed pick every week. This week, it's Sam Darnold throwing for more than one passing yard on next Wednesday's game, September 9th, against the Patriots in a Super Bowl rematch. Do you think Sam Darnold's going to throw for more than 1 yard? I do. I think everyone does. And if he does, when he does, you're on your way to making a little bit of money. So all you got to do to make that money, download the Prize Picks app today. Use promo code MAPES when you sign up to get $150 in lineups when you hit your first $5 lineup. That's $150 in lineups when you hit your first $5 lineup. Promo code MAPES on Prize Picks. Prize Picks, run your game.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
We'll get to David and LaRosa here But this keeps coming across my timeline. I don't know that I looked up any Harry Potter stuff for my algorithm to be force-feeding me the updates on this new series. Another trailer is out. I don't think we've ever had a conversation about Harry Potter because I'm not a big Harry Potter person. The movies are out. Okay, I'm a pop culture guy, so I watch them. But I'm not reading the books. I don't care about wizards.
What house are you in?
I've never done the Pottermore thing.
Okay.
I know someone who is a kind of a Disney adult. And so they will not only travel to Disney, but they went to Potter World, wherever the hell, whatever it's called. What is that, Universal or something?
Yeah.
They'll drink their butter beer. They'll be Slytherin. They'll talk to, I guess, Death Eaters or something. So I know the terminology because I've watched enough of the movies, but you're never going to catch me taking a test on Pottermore. But that series is out, and I love an HBO show, particularly a genre show. I don't know if I'm gonna lock in on this one.
I really have just seen the movie. I've seen the 2.5 hour versions of these things.
Do I need to see? I imagine with the series and each season's going to cover one book, so they're going to go more in depth on characters that maybe we didn't get a lot of time with, or at least give us the real book versions of the characters, because apparently there were some changes that the movies made. I don't know, man. Maybe since I know what happens, maybe I'll wait 5 years down the road when I'm not looking at 12-year-olds practice magic. So when all the main characters are like 17 or 18, yeah, I might care more. I don't know if I need to see another Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. The first season, especially with my anti-child bias on screen.
You don't like Pluck?
Yeah. Well, I also – I don't like when children – solve problems adults can't.
Even if they're magical.
Even if, well, especially. Well, the other guys are magical.
That's true. The adults are magical in that
they're
world,
all magical.
Too. Yeah.
So, yeah, the first, I don't know, two seasons, probably a pass for me. Yeah,
respectful pass. Unless I'm hearing that this thing is amazing.
It's
a can't miss. I don't imagine I will. But if I see, like, if Michael comes in, two episodes, like, then he goes,
this is gas.
This is gas. I hope he does
use that.
It's like
how Michael talks.
I hope he does use that about Ron and Hermione. They're gas.
The Dursleys?
He says he won't. What, you won't use the word, or you won't think the show is good?
Both.
Both.
Oh. Wow.
Well, we're already out on the Harry Potter series. Look
this
at that.
This series is mid. You heard it here first from...
Series isn't even out yet. It's mid.
From Michael Carroll.
He's out on that. All right. So there it is. Our reviewer that we'll hear from on Friday is already out in the series he hasn't seen yet.
Not my Harry, is what he said.
Yeah. If you're not Daniel Radcliffe, you're nothing.
Beat it.
To me. Out of here. All right. Let's get to David. Let's get to more serious things, like guards out of Georgia Tech. He wants to talk about Keelan Rutledge. What's up, David? David, go ahead. I heard you rustling. You know what, David? Hold. And then
hello?
David, is that you?
Yes.
Go ahead. You want to talk about Keelan Rutledge?
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm just given the Texans coaching staff, do you think that he could possibly get on that Travis Frederick or Zach Martin level? I'll hang up and listen.
So you're talking about a couple really good interior linemen for the Dallas Cowboys over the last decade or so. Travis Frederick was a first-round pick, 31st overall. Had a short run. He only played from 13 to 19, but he was really good at that during that time. Made an All-Pro team. Couple Pro Bowls, five Pro Bowls, couple second team All Pros. So he was a very good player. That is beyond what you think of Cole Popovich and the Texans' offensive brain trust. That's a high standard for anyone to reach over the course of about a 7-year career.
Yeah,
and then you throw in Zach Martin, who better than Travis Frederick, another one of these guys who, if he's not a Hall of Famer, I don't know who is as a guard. And he's another guy with a shorter career. You know, he's only 35 years old and he's out of football, which that would kind of make some sense. But he was a first-team All-Pro 7 times. And then the other 2 times he wasn't, second-team All-Pro.
Snubbed. You know what? I'm going to go out and say snubbed those 2 years.
He's already a part. He was named to the All-Decade team, the 2010s. So this is not about Cole Popovich, DeMeco Ryans, or Nick Cayley. I'm going to say Rutledge doesn't become either one of those guys because we're talking about some of the greatest interior linemen over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Only because of the standard they set, not because I think I don't think highly of the Texas offensive brain trust. In fact, I'm kind of in between. I'm not sure what they are after one season. It's probably unfair to put them on any tier right now. But I'll wait before I give them the ability to turn Keelan Rutledge into a Hall of Fame guard like Zach Martin.
Yeah, I think it's like 2 Pro Bowls. Can we
get 2 Pro Bowls?
Yeah, like over under 1.5.
And it's a real Pro Bowl now because the games are out of the way, so yeah, we don't need actual alternates anymore.
Yeah,
so it'd be a real Pro Bowl selection.
Basically, are you a top 4 guard
in the AFC?
In the AFC,
so top 8 overall.
Yeah,
can Keelan Rutledge get to be one of the 8 best guards in football? That's what we're talking
2
about.
2 times.
Although that would make you a 2-time. If you're a second team All Pro, you're one of the top 4. So yeah, can he get to be the 8th best guard in football? It's not an unreasonable
task.
Yeah. But how long does it take?
Yeah.
That's the question. Are the Texans a developmental team on offense? I mean, a developmental franchise on offense. We have not seen that. On defense, well, they've been able to draft high for a couple of their stars, so the talent was already there, so I don't know how much development is there. But, you know, Kamari Lassiter was good from the jump. Day 2 pick, 2nd rounder, I believe.
Bullock,
3rd rounder, was he?
He was definitely day 2. I forgot.
We know Nick Cassero while he is hit or miss with his O-line picks, he is a good evaluator of DBs. We have not seen on the other side of the ball the Texans be a team who can develop outside of Nico Collins. Nico Collins has gone from, he was a pretty good player at Michigan to one of the higher paid receivers in football.
Basically, like once he got CJ Stroud, he was
just an all-pro. He found a competent quarterback, and that's low praise for CJ after his rookie season, but I don't know what else to call him at this point until he proves otherwise. Once Nico Collins had a competent quarterback, you saw him blossom.
Yeah. But on offense, I mean, we're not really talking much here.
Yeah, now
in the
DeMeco Ryans era.
23 and after, yeah.
So, David, I got to see if this can be a developmental organization when it comes to their young offensive linemen. We know they have whiffed so far. Ursary yet to be told his story, but young offensive linemen under Nick Cassero don't develop.
Yeah, it's like identification and development.
Yeah, you're talking about can they be Zach Martin or Travis Frederick? Can they get a second contract?
Yeah.
Will Rutledge be good enough to be a guy that Texans want to give a second contract to? I think that's a start for who he is as a player. And hopefully he becomes a really good player and is a stalwart on this team for years to come. Because the way they're talking about him, he's already the guy they point to and go, this is how it should be done on the offensive line as a rookie. Out of Georgia
Not
Tech.
Being dirty, but going right to the line.
There's some way I want you to combine that. It's not the time for humping from Mike McDonald and how you might make some magic out of that. Thanks for the call, Dave. Appreciate it. Let's get to LaRosa. He wants to join the show. What's up, LaRosa?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing this morning today?
We're good. How are you?
Doing good. All right, so I had a quick question. You guys were talking about Harry Potter and stuff. So you guys are, very big on these movies and stuff. So what would you think these 4 houses would be if they were colleges, and which NIL deals would you think they give Harry Potter since they play Quidditch and stuff? And then also a serious question. Since Nick Cassero didn't come out with a deal, do you think it applies more pressure to C.J. Stroud for this year if he lays an egg or actually does something? Do you really think he's worth $70 million, or is it just to the 50 million club. I'll hang up and listen.
So, comparing the houses of Harry Potter to college football programs. Well, if you mentioned Quidditch, Harry, I don't know. I don't even remember what he was, what his official position was. But Harry, I would think he would be like a quarterback. Is Harry Potter getting Darian Mint some money to play Quidditch for Gryffindor?
I mean, he started as a freshman.
Yeah. That's true.
Is he like the Trevor Lawrence of? I mean, Lawrence had to.
Is
had
he
to
Bryce
behind...
Underwood?
Yeah, Bryce Underwood.
Would he get paid like Bryce Underwood did to go to Michigan?
He was the boy who lived, so he came in with some hype.
Yeah, people knew a lot about him. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Bryce Underwood.
Ron was an underrated prospect. There was a thought that Hermione was going to use magic for him to make the team. Turns out she didn't, and he did make the team. So Ron is – do we want to compare all these guys to quarterbacks? I was going to see if I can call Ron Baby Jesus. But
no, that's just –
that's actually Harry Potter. If we're talking about the Messiah-type figure. Harry Potter's more like Malachi Tony. He's baby Jesus. Came in as a freshman. If we don't want to always use a quarterback. And everyone knew about him. And he was the Messiah-like figure. Malachi Tony got a good deal. But he was 17, the story, all that stuff, when he entered college. So I don't know what Gryffindor's paying a guy. Gryffindor's probably LSU at this point. How LSU's looked at right now in college sports.
I was thinking Notre Dame, where they're like, hey, we do things the right way here. You know, we're not taking these NFL guys because we're worried about
Slytherin?
Class.
You think, did I say Gryffindor? Slytherin's yeah. LSU.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You say Gryffindor.
Okay, Gryffindor. Okay, Gryffindor. Yeah. But do we believe Gryffindor's really doing it the right way?
Do we believe Notre Dame's really doing it the right way?
Not particularly.
There we go. No. It's about the branding, though.
They lie in our face about that stuff.
It is funny that the houses are like, the good guys, the bad guys, like,
and then you have
the nerds.
Then you have the other two who don't get talked about a lot.
Who cares?
Yeah, I don't even. What is it like?
Who cares anyway?
You're Gilbert right now. Who cares? Who cares anyway? Gryffindor, Slytherin, and then there's Hufflepuff, and then whatever the other one is. Ravenclaw. There it is. I told you I watched those stupid movies, but never the books. Never the books. As far as your C.J. Stroud. Question. Well, I don't want to say they're stuck with him, but even if he doesn't perform well, they've already picked up the fifth year option. Now, in terms of quarterback money, it's not so crazy to have that on your books at whatever it might be. So I think we're going to get CJ, unless the relationship gets so bad because they don't give him a deal, we're going to have him for 2 years, unless he implodes. I think the only way C.J. Stroud's not the quarterback of the Texans in 2027 is if he completely implodes and they say this is not a quarterback we can keep as our QB1 if we want to win.
If he's so bad that he is not the starting quarterback.
They will cut him. Yeah. They will take the dead cap hit and try to move and find a way to go find a guy, whether it's a stopgap, which it likely would be, because I don't think he could be bad enough when you add the defense into the equation where they're in a position to pick a top quarterback. So, So if it goes poorly and he can't be their guy anymore, then they're looking in the Baker Mayfield direction, which is someone a certain sales staff member really wants. If we go by her conversation after the listener party on Friday, we talked about how funny she was. Not safe for work, the thing she was saying about your quarterback. It's one woman's opinion.
Yeah,
funny one, but one woman's opinion. But that's the disaster scenario. The more likely thing is, despite Nick Caserio putting his little drawing a line in the sand about if we don't get it done by week one, we have to wait till the offseason. The likely scenario is CJ's getting paid about $57-58 million. If he replicates the last two seasons, excluding the playoff disaster, and that'll be exciting for some people. For other people, to be like, wow, that's too much money. And that will all be dependent on how this season goes. Like, if he's the quarterback of a AFC title appearance team, or they make the Super Bowl, people will be more likely to, even if they have some hesitation, go, you know what? He did lead us to the Super Bowl or the AFC title game. And I put lead in quotes because we know who's actually leading this team. That people will stomach it and go, you know what? The team's good with them on it. And then you get into team building questions about, can you pay a non-superstar quarterback that type of money, considering how expensive the elite unit on your team is when he's not even on that unit. But that's for Caserio to figure out. And it will be a question that will be determined by how good your quarterback is over the next 4 months or so. Jerry, you want to talk Dynamo? We'll get to that when we come back. Anyone else want to join us in hour two? The number is 713-780-3776.
ESPN 97.5.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.